Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is your official Leguizamarama spoiler warning. If you have not seen Meadowland and you don't want it ruined for you, then you can only listen to the first quarter to half of this podcast. We'll tell you when we're going to start talking about Meadowland. But
it'll probably be around about the point where we both burst into tears over this incredibly sad film.
Probably then.
Yeah, I reckon when you start to hear us cry, that's when we're about to talk about how sad this movie is.
That's the little heads up. Please enjoy this episode of Leguizamarama.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got one leg, you're gonna fuck it in chicken. Gonna put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man. Luigi Mario!
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama. It's a podcast where each week myself and my nerd mate, like me, I'm nerd too.
No, you're not. Not like me.
Not like you.
I wasn't that much of a nerd when I've become more of a nerd in my 30s.
I care less if people think I'm a nerd. Now that I'm in my 30s. We'll get to that.
Yeah, okay. That's a good conversation. This is good.
Yeah, it's good.
This is good. So there you go, everyone. Everyone that was listening to that spoiler warning being like, surely they're going to start talking about the film pretty quickly. Nah. Listen to this. We're going to talk about being nerds.
My name is Mish. You might know me from my nerdiest thing. You actually might know me from this because we did an episode on it in the podcast. I know a lot about Buffy, the Vampire Slayer. And if you ask me, that's fairly nerdy.
Yeah.
Right? That's a level of nerd. I did a 24-hour Twitch stream once.
Yeah, that's the nerdiest thing you've ever
done. That's the nerdiest thing I've ever done. So if that's how you know me, that's so funny. But also I'm joined as always by my super dorky, geeky mate, Zachary Thomas Ruane, who you might know from. What's the nerdiest thing?
The nerdiest thing I've ever done. It's hard. I'm trying to think. It's got to be something like engaging with, I love, I'm trying to think. It's got to be like, I think it's the fact that I'm into physics at the moment. Or also I watched a video about, do you know what it is? It's one video I watched. About 6 months ago, I watched a video where a guy reviewed the train from Melbourne to Adelaide.
That's nerdy.
And that's it's not like I'm a train guy or anything like that, but I watched that video.
When you say reviewed the train, do you mean the train trip?
Bit of everything, yeah.
Because not often, but I have definitely fallen into holes of like vloggers, YouTube vloggers on different trains around the world doing overnights. Some of the vlogs on Indian, like overnight trains in India are fascinating.
So this is different. So what I would say is when I was in the middle of the last tour I did, I took to watching videos similar to what you're describing. There was one brand of video that was, I think it was often a Chinese guy, but you wouldn't know, where it was like vlog style. And they were just filming, from their perspective. They never showed themselves. And it was just, like, overnight train trips or, like, a day in the life, often in Japan. And then they didn't talk. They just had all of their narration or commentary in the subtitles. And then that way it could be in lots of different languages. So, like, I don't think English was their first language, but they just had subtitles. So it's these, like, quiet,
amazing.
But I wouldn't say that's nerdy. That's more like just calm, mindless.
I wouldn't say that's nerdy.
No, the one I watched was, yes, it was about an overnight trip, but he was talking about the type of train.
Yeah, okay,
he was
that's nerdy.
About like how they need to do more regular.
That's nerdy.
It was my little dip in the toe of becoming a train guy, which I don't think I ever will, but it was my dip in the toe.
I think it's possible that anyone who's in the arts, comedy at very least, there's something about them that's a bit nerdy.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I have friends that are I'll actually say her name, but people have met her. She was on my 24-hour stream. My friend Tash, I would say, there's not an inch of nerd in her. I don't think she's nerdy at all.
No, she's very cool.
She's cool. She's just really cool. And she's one of the only people I know that's just like not, doesn't have an inch of nerd in them. Whereas I've had plenty of inches of nerd in me, if you know what I mean.
All right, we're done. See you later. We're done. Well, this is done.
But I think of all of our mates, like everyone we know that's in comedy, and they're all a bit nerdy.
I would say.
Even comedy cool boys. Like I would say Daniel Sloss is a cool boy.
Yeah, but
he's got
still
a
comedian.
Yeah, so it makes him a bit of a fucking nerd.
Yeah, everyone's a nerd. Mm. No, everyone in comedy is a nerd. And it's funny when they're like a comedian for like that people are like, oh, he's cool. Mm. But it's like, but he practiced comedy.
Mm.
She practiced being up there and doing comedy jokes.
Yeah.
Cool people don't do that. Cool people get the laughs without having to work on their skill.
Yes.
I was going to say, I think I got nerdier once I started doing comedy as a job. So I was always not cool. But I was more not cool in a drama kid kind of way, band camp kind of kid.
It's the difference. It's the difference between being a nerd and being a loser.
Yeah.
You know, but truthfully, I was a loser. Yeah. I was a loser in my early 20s.
See, I was a loser, right? I had a lot of nerd friends and I took interest in certain nerd things, but never. But now that I've like, I get my loser shit out with my job. Doing my little comedy plays, I've got room to explore my nerd shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think I've become more of a nerd.
What I mentioned at the top of this, I stand by, is that I don't care anymore if people think I'm a nerd or recognize that I'm a nerd. Not think, like they go, oh, well, she's a nerd.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't bother me at all now. It really is. Like I remember watching a bunch of like interviews on Oprah and stuff when I was younger. And it was like, when you turn 30, something happens. Then when you turn 40, something happens where you just stop care. You care less. It's really true. Like I got into my, I care so much less about those kind of like nerd, dork, geek, loser labels. Like, okay, sure. I'm 35 and at 35 years old have just started playing The Sims.
Yeah.
Right. And I find it really therapeutic in a way. Like, I don't know what it is about it. It's that like an hour goes so fast when you play The Sims, right? There's something about sitting down for 2 hours and just like playing The Sims. I know I'll get over it. I already am. Like, I kind of stopped already. But there was a 1 month in there, post comedy festival, where I was playing The Sims all the time. And I was like, there was a part of me that was like, oh God, am I a bit too old? Is this a bit too nerdy? I don't care. I don't care.
No, nor should you.
Our friend of the pod, Michelle Brazier, has just watched 7 seasons of Buffy for the third time.
Wow.
The third time. Like, I don't care. That's fucking sick. I'm really proud of her finding the time to do that. But that's fucking nerdy, man.
See, here's the thing about Buffy. I think Buffy's more... in the, I think it's less nerdy. It's more in the, more the category. It's more losery.
Okay.
Because it's more like, it's more the drama kids love Buffy.
Maybe.
But then maybe Angel is more nerdy.
She's watching Angel too.
Yeah. Well, I would love to rewatch Buffy. I really loved Buffy when it first came out. And then I sort of stopped watching it and I never finished it, but I'd love to watch Buffy.
I just thought of a fun game.
Okay, sure.
A little 5-minute game. I want you to tell me something about yourself or something that you do, and I will classify it as nerdy or a loser.
Okay.
Like nerd or loser, and I'll do the same. So I will tell you, I'll say I can answer 99% of questions about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and you would say?
Like I'd say loser.
Yeah, okay. And you would say to me, you watch...
I'll say to you...
A YouTube video about the way a train is built. And I would say nerd.
Nerd, yeah, okay. It's
a really good way for our listeners to figure out whether or not they're in fact nerds or losers.
Okay, so here's one. Mm-hmm. I've just started watching Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
so
that's Star Trek, right?
Yeah, Star Trek. Deep Space Nine is the one set on a space station, right?
Yep.
Sorry, mate, another seven seasons. But I don't know if I'll get into this. And part of the reason I don't love it is because the picture is not as nice. It's like more, it's not high definition.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up why that was and read a few articles about the fact that when they made Next Generation High Definition, they re-edited it from the original film they shot it on, re-edited it, did all the sound in surround sound and redid any of the CGI that was there, very limited CGI in that series, but redid any of the CGI in high definition. Basically, redid post-production to exactly match the show but in high definition. And I read all about that, and it's one of the things that's making me go, do I want to watch Deep Space Nine or not, because they didn't do that process.
Okay. So when you said I'm currently watching Deep Space Nine, I was like, okay, nerd.
Yeah.
But then when you started talking to me about all that other bullshit, a big fucking loser.
But not nerdy.
No, you're both kind of. I don't know how you managed it. Yeah. No, you went from nerd. The reason not wanting to watch it because the visual quality, that's you've turned into a loser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm.
Yeah, I get that. If I knew how to make it look better, I'd be a nerd. If I had the skills, the tools, but just reading articles about it. Yeah, I understand. All right. Your turn.
Oh, okay.
And do we need to clarify what loser is?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, do you want to?
No, I think that I want to be very clear. Losers are not losers.
No.
It's evolved.
Yes.
It's not you're not a loser. It's just a different kind of... Nerds are like, ugh, and losers are like, yeah, hi.
Okay. I recently had some friends over for dinner at my house.
Yeah. Was it the one I came to?
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
So before they came over, we obviously cleaned the house up a bit, like just wanted to make sure. And I was like organizing my office. I have like a really cute little. Did you go upstairs?
No, I didn't get it. Oh, okay. I can't remember what happened. Yeah.
In organizing my office, I deliberately placed some of the scrapbooking stuff I do in a drawer so that people wouldn't see. But sometimes I collect old postcards and I put them in a binder folder, like all together.
What
and
happened
stuff like
to
that.
You don't care anymore? That's a great fact.
Sorry. Well, actually, no, I said that for impact. I put it away. It just doesn't stay out.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, God, that's really funny. That's like a thing someone would have discovered about me. Yeah, but I don't care. That's why I'm telling
it
on the podcast.
Bit of scrapbooking. Scrapbooking is illusory.
Okay.
It's loser. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's scrapbooking as much as it is. I collect cool postcards.
I would say almost all arts and crafts.
Yeah.
Oh, collecting. See, all right. So
no, it's not collecting. It is I place them in this folder, but it's all postcards. It's not like I go out and buy sticker books and make different pages.
Elaborate on what you do, because do you cut them up? Do you find postcards you like?
No, I don't cut them up anymore. I used to, but now it's mostly if I find postcards I like, I will purchase them. Like a lot of bookshops have them. I get them from overseas, and I put them all together in different binders. But I place them very deliberately in nice places so that they look good.
So it's not just like a photo book. It's like you place them all around.
Yes.
And you mix it up. It's a bit of a...
Yes, a schmozzle.
Like it's a crafty
thing. A crafty thing. I would say it's crafty. And yeah, I would say it's crafty.
Well, you have to bring this in one day, one of them in, surely. Okay. Is that okay? Would you be willing to share that?
Fine.
Or is that something that's...
Like... No, it's literally just postcards I think are pretty.
When did you start doing this?
Oh, since I was 12. But but that's the collecting of like, you know when you sometimes go into a cafe and they have free postcards?
Yeah.
I used to collect a lot. I used to like grab ones I liked and then they just kind of all built up and I kept them in a shoebox. And then the shoebox started to overflow with like some old photos, like real crap ones that I never like did anything with. And then I bought some A4 binder folders like 4 years ago so that I could like work, like kind of, it was pre-COVID, so 2019. And I just put them all in there. And now when I get them, I like find the right place to put them.
In a binder folder?
Yeah.
So you put them in the binder?
Like plastic pockets with A4 sheets of paper in them.
And you just put them in the plastic pockets?
Yes.
Or do you stick them to a piece of paper or you just put them in the pocket?
I sometimes stick them to the piece of paper.
But mostly you just put it into
the pocket.
Does it have four pockets per A4?
No, it's just one in.
But so one page is one
postcard? But you can fit two postcards, sometimes three if it's a long, thin one.
And you can stack them on top of each other.
It's crafty. It's not like all-out craft. I don't break out the glue stick or the scissors for it.
Because the glue stick and the scissors is very clear door. It's like very clear loser, right? But collecting things is more in the nerd category. Mm. But I would say it doesn't sound like you go, oh, I have to get that particular postcard.
Mm.
Oh, they've just released. Do you ever think?
No, it's nothing like
They've just released a new range of postcards.
No.
No. Then I'm going to put it in the loser category.
Okay.
It's like you're a little liar bird collecting trinkets.
Yeah.
And that's arts, craft, all of those things largely fall into loser, in my opinion. Drama.
Yep.
All those things are in the loser category.
Mm-hmm.
Nerdy is like more
a fascination by a subject or topic.
And like facts and figures and bits and bobs and this and that.
Do you want to give me another one?
Okay. This is hard. Let me try and find something that's a little more vague. Because I think it's like, okay, all right. This is tough, Mish. Mm. If you have anyone, you just jump in.
I'm a fairly disorganized person, I would say. Like, would you describe me as disorganized?
It's hard to get a read on you.
Flighty. All of my spices are in alphabetical order in my cupboard.
Oh, I feel like that's almost neither. Almost neither.
Okay.
Alphabetical order in your cupboard. It's funny. You'd think that would be nerdy.
Mm.
But I think that's still losery. Because it's like, I'm going to organise this.
Yes, yes.
Nerdy would be like you then do like a little sheet.
Yeah.
Like with the system. Like you develop a Dewey Decimal system for spices. I keep my dried herbs and my spices separate. Yeah. That would be nerdy.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Let me. I've got one.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one. Here's one for you. I really like theme parks, as you know, and I watch YouTube videos about the history of theme parks and about the, latest news and all of that.
100% nerd.
Nerd.
100%. You're very nerdy about theme parks. But
you're
not a loser. A loser goes and buys the fucking Mickey Mouse ears.
Yeah.
I feel awful calling people. They're fine to be a loser. I literally listed off all my shit and apparently I'm 100% loser. Which
is fine.
But a loser.
No, I get it.
Then tries to kind of like has ownership of the theme park in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know exactly the type of content.
Theme park losers and theme park nerds are very different. You are a theme park nerd.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about and I fully agree. And it's funny because I sometimes judge the theme park losers and it's like, no, we're all
cousins, man.
We're all losers.
Yeah.
In the original sense of the word.
Yes.
We're all taking a thing that is for children and claiming it. But actually it's not for children because actually the whole point of Disneyland was something that would be as magical as for the parents as for the children. And when that concept was developed, parents were in their early 20s. So actually, actually I think you'll find it is for people in their 20s and 30s actually.
Yeah.
100%. And actually under you're right. It's how one approaches a thing is very key, and I approach it in a very nerdy way.
Yeah, 100%. I've just realized as well that I am a loser, and that's fine. Like, I don't think I'm a nerd. I think I might be a loser.
Oh, yeah.
And my partner is a nerd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a big time. Like the way he is about cars and sport.
Yeah.
He collects Hot Wheels. Like he's a nerd. Like, and I'm a loser. And that's beautiful, man.
My problem is like I said, I was a loser. Mm. I was fully a loser and then I'm becoming a nerd in my older age.
Yeah, see, I think I'm just full loser. I think I've always been a loser. I don't think I've ever been a nerd. Yeah, oh, no. Except for the drama stuff.
No, that's loser. All the drama stuff is loser.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yep. Sorry, I got confused.
It's okay. That's a loser thing to do.
Hey, we're going to go cut to an ad now.
Are we?
We are. But when we get back from the ad.
Yeah. We're going to reveal the nerdiest thing I've ever done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome back to the ad. It's the train thing. I already told you.
Keep up, you fucking loser.
I've already told you, losers. It's that train video I watched.
Listeners of Leguizamarama are losers, right?
Both.
Yeah, nerds and losers.
Nerds and losers.
Yeah, because they love, if they're listening, well, no, it's like if you're listening to hear Zach and I talk shit, I think you're a loser.
Yeah.
But if you're listening because you're a film buff and you love Johnny Legs, you're a nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or a bit of both, you know.
But hey, we've literally, we are you, so it's fine.
I am for.
What's Tom? Nerd.
Tom Armstrong, yeah. who's currently listening. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom. Nerd.
Oh, hardly either.
Yeah, he's almost just a cool guy.
He's nearly a cool guy.
Yeah, but I would say that the music thing is a bit nerdy. The sound effect, I'm sorry, it is. Like, you go into his office is the office of a nerd.
Do you know, here's the crazy thing about society, right, is there are certain things you can be nerdy about and it's not nerdy to be nerdy about it.
Mm.
People that are nerdy about sports, some of them are nerds, but some of them are just like, oh, this is my favorite, you know, these are the stats and I bet on them.
Mm.
But it's like, that's all nerd shit, but they're not nerds.
Mm.
But so Tom, yes, he's very good at what he does. He's probably more in the loser category, even though, because he's a bit vibey. Nerds, nerds are like, have you ever seen Zed, the DJ Zed?
No.
It's the funniest video. You've got to watch Zed. Do you ever watch, oh no, we were meant to talk about this movie, but we'll just say this. Did you ever watch, Architectural Digest?
Yes.
Zed is this like dweeby little DJ producer and he does DJ shows in Las Vegas and he's like in the Calvin Harris category. He's got a couple of pop hits under his belt, but he's this little dweeby German guy and his house on, it's so funny. It's just this like giant concrete mansion. It's the most impressive mansion you've ever seen. And he's just got like nothing in there. He's got like a gumball machine or some shit. He's like, hey, welcome to my giant mansion.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. It's so good to watch. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, amazing.
Anyway, there are little nerdy music people. I just don't know. Tom has to.
I don't think Tom's a loser. I strongly disagree that he's a loser. I think he's like this, like, he's a cool guy with, like, a little stripe of nerd so that he can, like, keep up with us a bit. You know what I mean? He's just got a little essence of nerd. His office is the office of a big fucking nerd.
Those are just tools of his trade.
Yeah, I know, but if you don't know of his tools of his trade, you're just like, what a nerdy office.
No, see, it's nerdy that I described his office as it's nerdy that I described his music instruments and his things as tools of his trade.
Yeah, that's true.
That's nerdy.
Yeah, that's true.
But for him, he just uses them to make music.
Yeah, true. Anyway, can we talk about this film?
Yeah.
All right. Cue the fucking waterworks.
Now, I want to say, I don't know if we've ever acknowledged this.
Oh, we're going to acknowledge it.
But I feel like it's important, just in case we ever did say it was coming out, or We did a full podcast on this episode, on this movie.
Yeah. If hello, Ridgie Didge listeners. Do you remember how one December period we were recording all of our episodes out of Comedy Republic? There was a we were talking about
how Comedy Republic. There were protesters outside because of Dan the Man, Dictator Dan.
And we did a bunch of episodes. We did record. So this was over, this is a year and a half ago that we watched and recorded this episode. However, we lost all the audio.
I knocked a cord.
You sat on it.
I sat on a cord.
And it pulled it out of the wall. That's okay.
Mistakes the cord happen. Was on a chair. Yeah. I will say it's not like I.
But we haven't wanted. Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't like he was just like fucking around.
Like the cord was on a chair and I sat on the chair.
Yeah. But we didn't want to revisit or re-record this episode because, firstly, we forgot. And secondly, it's a fucking heavy film.
We needed to give it a bit of time.
Yeah. I honestly couldn't have watched this movie twice within a year.
But I just thought, just in case, like, there's always been a part of me that, like, thinks we did release it, and even though I know we didn't, but there's just a part of me, not even that thinks we released it, right? Like, that's like, oh my god, what if we did accidentally fix it and release it?
And I thought forgot? So I went looking for it and I'm like, where the fuck is it?
So just in case we have done an episode on Meadowland, now I don't think we have,
I don't think we have,
but just in case we have,
yeah,
I also want to acknowledge it for that reason.
100%.
Because I don't think we have. But if we had and we didn't acknowledge it, people would feel like crazy.
Hunch.
But I don't think, yeah, we weren't able to save it. We sat on the cord. We did a whole episode.
And I actually remember it being very good, but I don't remember.
Was it? No, it was probably, yeah, actually, probably fine.
Yeah, fine. Anyway, go on.
That was a good run of pods. All right. Meadowland is a 2015 drama about the saddest shit imaginable. This beautiful and very depressing independent film directed by Reed Morano tells the story of a couple, played by the lady from House and the guy from Wedding Crashers, whose lives fall apart after their child goes missing. John Leguizamo plays Pete, another man who has lost his child. Fun fact, Reed Morano also directed all the episodes of The Power.
There you go.
Did you know that?
I did not know that. Well, fucking, let's just, like, very straight off the bat after you've said that. Directors love to work with Johnny Legs. He gets repeat work from different directors all the time.
Yeah.
All the fucking time.
That's really true.
I love that. I love that. I've got to say, I feel like, and I don't know if it's, I don't know why, I actually don't know the reason why, but I enjoyed this film a lot more watching it now than I did a year and a half ago. And I think it might be a mindset thing. It is by far and away, genuinely, one of the saddest movies I've ever watched. It's just dark and sad.
Yeah.
There is zero, like I'm talking zero lightness in this film.
Yeah.
It's incredibly heavy. It is not a light watch. This isn't like a midweek over dinner with your family happy film. It's really, really sad. Yeah, I just wanted to say that.
It's a movie that, here's what I think, I would really want to watch it at the movies because I think that because it's so depressing and so sad, the thing about a cinema is you have to turn off your phone and you're not allowed to pause it and you can't really leave. You just have to sit and watch the thing.
Yes.
And I think it's a movie that would really benefit from having to watch it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like I can see how there are certain movies where they're so depressing that it's like, well, I'm going to – like I want to pause this and take a break, whereas in a cinema, like – you have to go on that journey.
Yes.
And it feels very like cumulative.
Mm.
It's one I would love to, because it is, it's so full on, man.
Really full on. Also, side note, Luke Wilson was not in Wedding Crashers. That was Owen Wilson.
He did a cameo, didn't he, Luke Wilson?
No, Luke Wilson was in Legally Blonde.
Oh, thanks for the call out. I really am glad you said that.
You would have gotten DM after DM.
I could have sworn. Oh, no, I'm not even thinking of Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
What's his name? Oh, I'll show you. I'll tell
Ben
you.
Ben Stiller.
No, I was literally like, I had combined in my mind Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn.
Oh, okay.
And when you mix Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, you get something like, not unlike Luke Wilson.
Fuck yeah, it's true.
Oh, that's so funny. Because I was going to do Idiocracy, and then I was like, oh, no, I'll do. And then I was like, oh, I should double check that he was in it. And I didn't. And now I feel a fool.
Mm. The thing with this movie that I think is really, really interesting is you want so badly for there to be a conclusion in this film, right? So it opens with the opening scene is Luke Wilson and Harry Styles' girlfriend, Olivia Wilde, driving with their son in the back seat. They pull up at it's an
incredibly powerful opening.
So powerful. They pull up at a petrol station. They go to use the toilet. They come back out. The son's missing. That's how the movie opens, right? So you're watching the whole thing and just like, are they going to find their son? Is he alive? Is he dead? Who did it? Where is he? All these questions, right? And you're like, they're constant throughout the whole film. And as the film progresses, you realize that the film isn't about catching the guy who did it or whoever did it. It's not about finding the son. It's not about getting a conclusion. It's literally about the pain and suffering that the people involved in that situation are going through. That is what the movie is about.
And the pain of never knowing.
Of never knowing.
Always wanting to.
Yeah.
So
you never, like, well, we did a spoiler warning. You never find out what happened to the son. Like, Luke Wilson's trying throughout the whole thing. They all are. But you never find out. And it's not about the path of finding out who did it. Like, there's a movie, like, it's like 3.5 hours long. It's Hugh Jackman.
Prisoners,
right? The story, great film. That story is about like what happened, where are they, who did it, how they're going to get through it, whatever. And it earns its fucking 4, 5, 6 hours that it does, right? I think this movie is about it's just such an emotional what they're going through kind of thing, and it's a real like the cast is great.
Mm.
It's really great. It's really well cast. It's well acted. It's just super depressing. And I reckon when we first recorded it, I reckon one of my things that I would have said is, I don't think I'll ever watch this movie
again. That's so funny.
Because sometimes a movie can be so sad. Very good. I enjoyed this film. I enjoyed watching it because it evoked something. But and it's sad. I will never watch this movie again.
Yeah.
I can say that now because we won't lose this audio. Although how funny would it be
if we lost this audio? We had to keep watching this movie. It's interesting you say you liked it more.
Yeah.
I think I did. I think I was really not in the right headspace. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I really was just, this was not the movie I wanted to watch. And I left it till last night, so it had to be last night.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of movie that, you know, you got to be in the right headspace to watch it.
Without a doubt. That's what I mean by you don't just chuck this on.
Yeah. And I'm interested because I think I liked it more too on the second viewing. And I'm interested to know why that was for you. I've got theories. I've got thoughts.
I actually don't know. Because oddly enough, with a movie like this where it is so dark and depressing, and I honestly think I would have said the first time we recorded that I don't want to ever watch it again. Having to watch it a second time, I don't know, maybe I was watching different things in the film, potentially.
Do you want to hear my two thoughts?
Yes, please.
One is, I think we watched a pirated version the first time we watched it.
Oh, did we?
I think we did. And I don't think the quality of the video was very good when we watched it.
Okay.
And I think we downloaded it this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really
beautiful. Legally.
And it was really beautifully shot.
Mm-hmm.
We very rarely do a pirated, but I think we just might have done a pirate. Or at the very least, I just remember the quality being not very good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this time around it was really, I think it was a lot more beautiful. Mm-hmm. We probably shouldn't admit to pirating, whatever.
I wouldn't mean admit to pirate. Go on to the Alexi episode where we watched Super Mario Brothers, where it's just literally the three of us breaking down over watching an illegal copy of something.
The second thing I would say is knowing that it's not going to go on the journey you think it's going to go on.
Yeah.
Means you're more able to accept it for the ride.
That's actually, I reckon, what it is. Very clever. So nerdy of you.
Well, I also think there's just an element where it's her descent, but it starts a year in. It starts with her already in a horrible place, and then it's her making bad choice. So it's like, that's the thing watching it again where I was like, stuff I thought happened kind of early on, and then you're like, God, how are we ever going to happen towards the end? So it's just like, it's bad, and then it just gets worse and worse and worse, and then it kind of finishes, and it's this really like...
I think the realization the first... I think you hit nail on the head. The realization when watching it the first time, about three quarters of the way through the movie, that we're not going to get any answers. And you heard me when I went on my rants, particularly in The Power. I love answers. Like, I love... Like, I know it's shit, but I love this movie.
I love this movie, but I find myself
watching stuff like this going... Oh my God, just tell me. I need to know. I don't think I can go on not knowing. I can't just have this, blah, blah, blah. And if you sit in and you allow yourself, it can be a really, really beautiful experience. But three quarters of the way through this movie, the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, we're not going to get answers. We're not going to get them.
I don't disagree with you on, I don't think I need answers, right? I think that for me, if there's ambiguity, I need to be told there's a sure hand taking me through the ambiguity, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a sort of like, I think that the choice to not tell us who, like the choice to go, this isn't about who did it, is a really bold choice. And that there needs to be a structural element for me that says, we're not going to take you down that path. I don't know how to describe it exactly, but there needs to be an element where it's like, it starts with, you're never going to know. Here's a story about grief. Or you go down a path and then there's a point where it says, we might never know. And it kind of happens in this film, but like, it feels like you think it's going to go down a certain path, and it made me think. It's funny you mentioned Prisoners, because Prisoners is interesting because it sort of structurally is about catching the killer, but almost subtextually or textually, it's about like it's not really about who did it.
No, yes, you're right.
It's more about, and often in Hollywood films, they give you a quick like, oh, it was him.
Yes, yeah.
Like you can tell the studio begged the director for, oh, it was him.
Please just give us that guy from Ruby Sparks. Make it him. It was him, yeah? Good.
No, but I don't think it was him was the point of Prisoners, wasn't it?
I haven't watched that movie in a really long time.
Because I think the idea of Prisoners was they didn't really know who it was, and then they start torturing this guy and it might have been him, but it might not have been him. But then I do think they kind of at the end go, oh, it was him. I might be wrong though, but there's another movie that I thought of. Have you ever heard of The Vanishing?
Yes, yes.
Not the, which one did you?
Wait, I'm thinking of the early noughties horror film, The Vanishing.
Yeah, no. I had to look it up because there's so many films with this name. There's so many films with this name, but
not the one with what's his fucking name? Oh, I've forgotten his name, Gerard Butler.
No. Okay. So The Vanishing is a film. I haven't watched this film in so long, right? It's almost one that you shouldn't, if you do watch it, you shouldn't look it up because, like, I think even the DVD cover was the ending, right? It just gives away the ending.
Oh, my God, it's so annoying.
But it's a film about a guy whose wife goes missing. And the whole film is about him becoming obsessed with finding out not just who did it, but what happened to her. He wants so desperately to know what happened to her. And it's about that obsession. And then it goes down a really, really, really dark path. And then it has this like incredible twist at the end. But it's really structurally clever. From memory, I haven't watched this film for years. But it's really, really structurally clever because you are on the journey with him and you want so desperately for it to be about, you want so desperately to know what happened to her that by the time you get to the end and you realize that, like,
you're not getting that.
Or that maybe you're not getting, I don't want to give it away.
Yep, okay.
Maybe you're not getting it, maybe you get, but it's like that you get pulled in and the lesson is, you know, maybe that's not the path you should have gone down. It's a really structurally clever thing where
very
it's like,
cool.
It's about, then they made a remake of it in America where with, I think, Kiefer Sutherland in the early 90s, because it's a whole movie where the ending is the reason it exists. It's got this incredibly powerful ending, right? And it's the reason it exists. And then they remade it in America, but the ending was a bit too bleak. So that's actually the end of Act Two. And then he, like, then he finds the killer. Or, like, he gets him or something. It's
that's
so
like Captain Corelli's mandolin. I don't know. Oh, right.
No, yeah.
In the book, spoiler alert, in the book, he dies, right? In Captain Corelli's, he dies. In the movie, he dies and she's sitting on her porch sad right at the end before the credits, and then they just shoot, have a shot of him walking up a hill towards her. He didn't die. And she's just like, oh! So they just kept him alive in the movie?
That's so funny.
Fucked. Anyway, what you just said then about that movie, I feel like is Meadowland. It's that you get to the end, it's like maybe you shouldn't have been focusing on that. And that's why maybe I liked it the second time around so much, like what you said.
I wasn't watching it
to try and figure out who, because I remember the first time we watched it, they kind of set up that maybe it could have been John Leguizamo's character. Remember?
Oh.
It's like, was it someone from his AA meeting? Like, I was saying that I was thinking maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, because I don't.
I think I was saying, like, yeah. Oh, who is it in the AA? Not the AA meetings. He's like, you know what I mean? The grief counseling.
But you're watching it.
Yeah, going, who is it?
Who is it?
And then you never get it. It's just like, because, like, I remember Giovanni Ribisi popped up. I was like, oh, that's a Giovanni Ribisi role to have done it.
That's who it was. Yeah. That's who I thought. The Giovanni Ribisi. And then I could never.
Because Giovanni Ribisi would be cast as that character. Do you know what I mean? He would be cast as the character that's a loving member of the family and yet also abducted the son. Like, do you know what I mean? But, and so I was focusing on that the first time. Like, maybe it was him. And then when you're just like, no, it's not him and that's not the focus and that's not, it's like, oh. So the second time around I was able to watch it very differently. For example, the scene on the rooftop where Olivia Wilde and Giovanni Ribisi are doing all those drugs.
Mm.
It's so full on and they just,
it's him not wanting her. There's something really powerful.
Oh my God.
About an addict who is down that path already.
Yeah.
Who's not going to stop someone from doing the drugs, but is then also like, oh, don't do it. You know, the look on his face of,
oh my God.
Fuck, Giovanni Ribisi's good.
So good. Like, so good. In fairness, he plays this role a lot in a lot of movies. But fucking so? Like, he's so
This is what I was saying before. If actors are good at one thing and they're really good at it.
I've always liked him. Like, even when I was younger, I was a big Giovanni Ribisi fan. But I think that this movie, he is just, like, really phenomenal. That would be a very interesting study of filmography as his, because I would love to see the roles he hasn't played this character in. You know what
Ribisi,
I mean?
Ribisi, I think, would have a very similar career. I loved Ribisi as an actor at a very similar time. I loved John Leguizamo. Like, I was, really loved Giovanni Ribisi. I wonder if there was a particular film that made me love him. I think he just popped up a lot and he was always cool.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I think if we'd had the conversation, genuinely.
We could have been doing.
If we 4 years ago had a conversation about how much we loved Giovanni Ribisi,
we could have been
this
doing
would
Giovanni
be the Giovanni Ribisi thing. Ribisi.
But no, I'm the same. I feel like it would be fascinating to see because I think he would have films where he plays different to that. But also, this is the thing I was saying a few weeks ago because I think I mentioned Nicole Kidman a few weeks ago. And, like, I think I went in a bit hard on Nicole Kidman and it seemed like I thought she could only do one thing. I don't think that. Mm. I think she's an incredible actor.
Mm.
But we ask too much of actors. We sometimes define actors by what they can't do.
Mm.
And it's just like, well, just don't do that. Don't ask them to do that. And if Giovanni Ribisi only does that, he probably doesn't, but if that's all he can do.
Just looking at his filmography, he does do other things, but he does play the kind of fucked up side man real good.
Yeah, he's very good at that part.
Oh, my God. Like that's who you want. That's who you want if you have written a fucked up... Whenever you see a movie with a fucked up side man, you know they wanted Giovanni.
Do you know what? I think that Giovanni Ribisi and John Leguizamo, not anymore, but I think there was a period in the late 90s, early 2000s where the list that the director got of people they were allowed to cast in that role had both Giovanni Ribisi and John Leguizamo.
Oh, there's a definite crossover for
There's a list that they were both on.
I have a feeling, like, they would not have seen each other in the filming of this movie. They're never in a scene together.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have, like, whatever. However, I was about to say, like, wouldn't it be nice seeing them together? However, Zach, I've just looked up Giovanni's
filmography,
and he's in Waco, The Aftermath.
That's
which
great.
I'm so excited for.
I'm so excited for Waco.
And he's in it, and that's so great. No, Giovanni Ribisi, phenomenal. But I will say, you mentioned it now months ago, I think, but you were like, oh, I what's for John Leguizamo's sizzle reel? Like, what would you take? I definitely would include some stuff from this movie.
Yeah. This sizzle reel.
He plays a dude that you mentioned at the top.
But Paulie, you can explain it better than me.
No, not at all. Like, I'm not trying to.
I'm not.
He plays a guy in Luke Wilson's grief counseling, the group grief counseling, who also lost his daughter. And he lost his daughter who was crossing the road one day after school and she got hit by a drunk driver. And John Leguizamo, I believe, from what you gather from this film, his daughter probably died a while before Luke Wilson's son went missing, So he's been through it a bit more and he takes on a kind of like a very, very friendly mentor position for Luke Wilson. He's only in properly two scenes, right? But in the first scene that he takes him to a diner for a cup of coffee and Luke Wilson asks him, what happened to your daughter? And John, it is such an incredible example of, like, masterclass acting shit. Because he tells the story and he tells it like a man who is talking to someone who is grieving, but he's dealt with his grief a bit better. You know what I mean? And he's like, and it's like, well, this is what happened. You know, she was crossing the road and it was really, really sad and it was awful. And some guy, a banker or whatever, got really drunk, was driving home and he hit her and it's awful. And there's this... It's just the most subtle of changes, like the most intricate, subtle of changes where he goes, sometimes I think about killing this man.
Yeah, he does that.
And it's the most...
throwing in front of a train.
And it is the most intensive, like... And he's saying it just sitting across from this guy at a diner and it's not this big dramatic weeping moment. It's like the subtlest of changes which makes you realise that all the stuff he's talking about dealing with your grief and how he's dealt with it and how he's had to... is all facade because deep down inside he is still as in much pain as Luke Wilson is. But it's so subtle and it's so, and that, my friend, is for the John Leguizamo sizzle reel because that is phenomenal. Like he is phenomenal.
He's so good in this scene.
I think that this film, I will never watch it again once, I really won't because it was too heavy. It was so heavy. I've seen it twice now. But if you're in the right place, you have a dog with you and a big doona and some bed socks and something yummy to eat and it's just you and your phone is put away on airplane mode, watch this film.
Yeah.
It's really powerful and he is so good. He's only in two scenes.
Really, yeah.
Properly. He's only in two scenes. And both of them are the most intricate and like... Oh, it's so good, Zach.
It is really good. I think you really hit the nail on the head that he doesn't go for the emotion in it, which is really nice. Mm. Like he just it's like he's told the story a lot of times. You feel the depth of pain. And you're so right. Like I think good acting knows when the lines have enough impact.
Yeah.
It's a very strong scene.
And we have seen John Leguizamo one of the reasons we love him so much, and what we've discovered in doing this podcast, is we've seen him take some really bad writing, and no actor can work with bad writing like John Leguizamo can. But what's incredible is to see him take good writing and just be in that good writing.
You're so right. Like, it's the difference of like, I think the test of a good actor is bad writing. I can't.
Zachary, what?
I can't do bad writing well. Mm. I don't know how to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you give me a great script, I could be a good actor. You know what I mean? Yeah. I could say the words good.
Yeah.
So I think you're so right. Like, he is so wonderful when the writing is bad. The way he elevates it is really good. But you're so right. It's then such a treat
to
see him with really good writing.
Yeah.
The one issue I have, and this is not the fault of the filmmakers, because this is Luke Wilson's story. Well, it's really... No, it's Luke Wilson and Olivia Wilde's story, right? But because it's Luke Wilson's story, there's a lot of like shot reaction shots on him as he's listening, because it's about his journey and his and it's like, for me as a person doing a podcast about a single actor, I was like, stay on John Leguizamo, stay on him. I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, this is bad editing. Why aren't we staying on John Leguizamo? And then this time around, I was much more like, oh, because it's not his scene.
Yeah.
It's not his scene. And I was like, that's the one thing about like when, you know, that I love the Giovanni Ribisi's and the John Leguizamo's and the, but even when they get a great scene, it's not their scene.
No, you're right.
And it's like, that's why I love when he's the lead or he's like the second lead, because it's like, it's his scene and he gets to
He was, fun fact, and John Leguizamo for this.
Ah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does really make sense.
Was it, let me guess, when was it made? 2014?
15, yeah.
15. I think it would be Olivia Wilde first now, but I reckon it would have been Luke Wilson.
Yep.
Olivia Wilde, Giovanni Ribisi, rest of cast, and John Leguizamo. Yes. That's my guess.
Yes, that was right.
Yeah.
Very good. Do you have any final thoughts about Meadowland?
Do I have any final thoughts about Meadowland?
I have one. I would just like to reiterate, genuinely, that 'twere not for this podcast, I would never have watched Meadowland.
No,
I agree. I've watched it twice. But
I don't know what that means.
But I'm just saying.
I don't know.
We could unpack that, maybe. But let's not.
I just know that for 2 hours. No.
But genuinely, I've somehow managed to watch it twice. But is it my favourite movie? No, it's not. But I'm really glad I watched it.
Yeah.
Twice was a stretch, but it's very, very good. And it is like phenomenal acting. Just be aware, just reiterating, zero lightness. It is very grim.
Do you know what I think I'm going to go and try and watch now is To Leslie, the independent film. There was a bit of controversy around Andrea Riseborough's Oscar nomination. Did you hear about that?
No.
I've been wanting to watch it for a little while, but it's a similar kind of film, a micro-budget film about a self-destructive woman.
Great.
And I would love to just watch it because I've heard great things about her performance, and I wonder if it's a similar kind of just like feeling or just... Something, it's watching this, I was like, I think I want to watch some films with a similar theme and see how they tackle it differently.
Yeah.
Because it's such a heavy
concept.
I also really agree with you. I know we say this a lot, but the real treat of this podcast for me, did it to chat to you and to make a silly podcast, but the real treat and the real like layer, it's like, I feel like if I ever went to if I was ever talking to a young filmmaker or a young writer or a young something, not that I am an old one of those, but if I ever was talking to someone young that sort of does what we do, I think in the past I would have said, find a director you really like and watch all of their films, or find a writer you really like. But I think now I would say, find a character actor you like and watch all of their films, because the broadness of it is so cool.
Mm. It's so cool.
It's so cool to watch a film and just learn from it and go, this is what worked, this is what didn't work. And like, Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I'm giving it 4 Leguizamos. It's a very Leguizamo-y film. It just is. It's exactly the kind of role he did. He did many of these bit parts. It's later on in his career. It's a 2015, and it very much feels like it could be 2009 in terms of the role it is. But I think he is so good in it. The reason it doesn't get 5 is because of pretty much what you said about how the shots are of Luke Wilson, and in true John Leguizamo, Leguizamarama films, it's all John.
Yeah, I gotta give it a 4 as well. He's so stellar.
Yeah.
It's about taking that and John Leguizamo, or that third build John Leguizamo, and just elevating it.
Yeah.
That's why we did this podcast. Yeah, 4 for me.
Great.
For all exactly the same reasons as you. Awesome. And I'm gonna repeat them. No.
Thank you so much for listening. Let us know if you watch Meadowland. I really, really do love getting the DMs and the comments from people who have watched the movies or watched the episodes of things that we've watched and being like, oh my God, I felt this way about it. If you watch Meadowland, I'd really love to hear from you.
Yeah, because great.
I'd love to know. Tom, can you please take us away with a sick, cool beat? And over the beat, can you either be saying, I'm a cool boy, I'm a nerd, or I'm a loser, based on what you think you are?
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you bloody next week. Bye-bye. Nerd. 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 Nerd.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.